This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Agroecology is a term that's been around since the 1970s. It's used to describe an approach to agriculture that has a lot of the features of organic farming, but with a particular emphasis on social justice. Agroecology can provide solutions to some of the problems farmers currently face with the rapidly changing climate. A new report by the Oakland Institute examines 33 success stories in the field of agroecology. They're all from Africa, spanning the continent from Ethiopia to South Africa and from Kenya to Senegal. Frederick Musso is policy director with the Oakland Institute, and he joins me this morning to talk about some of the stories in the report. Hello, Frederick.
Hello, Jane. Thanks a lot for having me again.
Oh, it's our pleasure. This report made very inspiring reading. It was great to see so many success stories gathered together in one place. What was your motivation for putting it together?
Well, you know, over the past years, there's been a really a big push from the corporate side and many governments agreeing the demand for increasing investment in agriculture, modernizing agriculture. We need to feed 9 billion people by 2050, and so there's this big push that came following the 2008 food crisis. But what we hear the most is modernization, need more fertilizers, more GMOs, and we decided to go see what are the other solutions that would benefit not just these corporations but the farmers and the populations, especially in Africa, which is the continent today, which is facing many challenges with hunger, poverty, but also land degradation and as well as land grabbing, because it's the main target of corporations grabbing land in the developing world. So all this together really made it compelling for us to develop these case studies and show a different side of the story than what we're hearing in the mainstream media.
One of the case studies looks at a kind of biological pest control in Kenya called push-pull. And I have to admit, when I first saw the title, I thought it was about pulling weeds, but actually push-pull refers to repelling and attracting a particular pest from maize crops. How does the push-pull system work?
It is really fascinating, and it is one of the many fascinating practices and stories we found. It has been really an exciting project to learn, like you have learned so much through these case studies. Basically, the push-pull is a system of intercropping, and it has been mostly developed in Kenya, where the main staple crop is maize, and maize is affected by a weed, the striga weed, as well as by the stem borers, which are insect parasites. And the push-pull is it's very simple when you think of it. It's about intercropping with your maize plants that are going to repel these stem borers, these parasites, and also combining with other plants that will attract this parasite as decoys. And this is why we have the push-pull. It's repelling and attracting at the same time. Instead of using chemicals, which would be very expensive for farmers to afford there, this intercropping is a great solution to the key problem they have, and it's one stone, two birds with dealing both with the parasites and the weeds, while at the same time improving the fertility of the soil and the productivity of the maize. So it has been a huge success in Kenya and East Africa.
It was introduced in 1999, but it really started to take off in the last 5 or 6 years. How many farmers now use this system?
So it has reached this year 100,000 farmers. It's mostly Kenya, but in other parts of East Africa as well. And it's really expanding very, very fast because farmers see the results and see what they get in productivity, but also what they save, all the expenses in terms of manpower for weeding and so on, and chemicals that they don't have to spend. So it's really a win-win for many small farmers and for the environment because it's all biological.
Now, going from Kenya to West Africa to Mali, the crop here is rice, and the problem is not insects but water, which comes from the floodwaters of the Niger and is highly variable from year to year. What's the approach in Mali?
So what we've documented in Mali is what is called SRI, the System of Rice Intensification, which is a system that was created in the 80s in Madagascar. And it has really been developed a lot in Madagascar, where thousands of farmers are using it today. And it has been, since Madagascar, it has been slowly spreading around the world, and there's really a big hope that this system will spread further. This case study is very interesting too because it's taking place in Timbuktu, and Timbuktu, for those who have some knowledge of West Africa, is really a place in the Sahara Desert, and people would not imagine that you could get 9 tons of rice per hectare in a place like that. And it is exactly what this system of rice intensification is doing. What they're doing basically it's a different way of planting rice with more spacing, with more organic inputs in the planting, and giving more spacing and allowing more sunlight and more nutrients and better water use for the crops. You get a lower plant density, but much more productive crops. And this system has been again going on for a number of years. And from the 4 tons per hectare that was given with conventional cropping and water and chemicals, this system with no chemical is reaching 9 tons per hectare as an average, and can reach even more, 12, 13, in some farms. So it has been a huge success. And for a country like Mali, which is mostly desert and which is struggling with a lot of food insecurity, having this kind of yield is a big hope.
One thing that came through really strongly to me when I was reading the report is that these are such simple ideas, in a sense, and the results are so incredible, doubling, tripling yields, reducing the amount of money that has to go into it. And throughout the report, you pulled out things that people in the countries have said that to show how these have really changed lives, kept children in school. It's really a remarkable achievement.
Yes, it is fascinating and exciting because you do see and it's really going away from this image of Africans starving and struggling with drought and conflict and poverty. You really have real success stories where you have quite often we hear, like, the people at the experts at the World Bank, for instance, telling us, oh, these subsistence farmers are not productive and we need to modernize agriculture in these places. But you see, people are very active. They are entrepreneurs. They are very open to innovations. And it's not at all the picture that we are getting. And the proposals we've heard so many times is with this modernization that we need this modern farms, the way we see them in the West, with big machines and big surfaces. But what we see here in terms of modernization is a modernization that doesn't need our big machines and our big corporations to run the farms. They just need small farmers to get together and use appropriate technologies, which are low input, low cost, and very effective for them.
Now, the last study I want to talk about with you comes from Zimbabwe, and it's the brainchild of one man, a peasant farmer there, Zephaniah Firi Maseko. And Mr. Maseko was dealing with soil that ranged from sand to heavy clay. He was dealing with drought. He was dealing with heavy rain that then created flooding. He started on working on his land in the 1960s. What did he do?
Yeah, Mr. Zefania Firi is a very fascinating innovator again. Unfortunately, he passed away a few months ago at the age of 88, and he's really leaving us with a huge legacy on what he has done in terms of water management and agroecology. And he's renowned in Southern Africa and in Zimbabwe as the water harvester. And he got this nickname because his place, his farm in Zimbabwe is in an area as most of Zimbabwe where again farmers are mostly monocropping or were mostly monocropping corn, maize, and it's an area which is very significantly prone to droughts or erratic rainfalls, which makes the cultivation of maize challenging with many many crop failures. And with this challenge, the way it has been going on for decades with heavy support from governments was to provide a lot of improved seeds and fertilizers to farmers so they could deal with this challenge and replant as much as necessary. But this was clearly not appropriate to the environment and to these rainfall patterns, and very costly for governments because they had to subsidize all these inputs, and farmers had to put more and more fertilizers. So Mr. Ferry looked at this situation, looked at his own land, which was very dry, and you'll see in the case study there are the photos of before and after, which are really showing a very stark contrast in terms of landscape and how it looks today compared to how it looked few decades ago. And he decided to manage the water. They were rainfalls, but they were erratic and heavy with a lot of damage by flood and erosion. So he decided to look at his own 3-hectare parcel and to see what he could do to stop this flooding and erosion, to capture the water, to harvest the water, and to use it to his own benefits in the future. So he created It lasted several decades, but over these several decades, it created a network of ditches, dams, ponds, and by doing all this, it stopped the erosion and started harvesting water. And from this very dry, mostly sterile land, it made a farm which today grows over 20 different crops, has been highly productive, and is from a poor farmer, it became very successful farmer, but also a model for the country and for the region. And people have been visiting and coming to learn from him, and other people, other farmers in other villages started reproducing what he was doing. It's also very exciting because it doesn't come from anyone, any NGO, anybody coming from outside. It comes from a farmer seeing what the constraints are, what the opportunities and the assets he has there that he can use, and showing he can do it without any external assistance, and become a model, and then develop something that can be reproduced by everyone.
Oh, we've only had time to talk about 3 stories, but there's 33 stories in the report, and it's really, I do recommend anybody to go to it and have a look and feel inspired. So thank you so much, Frederick, for talking to me this morning and for producing the report.
Thank you so much, Jen, for having me, and all the case studies are available at oaklandinstitute.org on our website, so please free, you can read them in English. Many of them are translated in French too, and it's a very good reading for the weekend with a lot of good news and exciting news to learn about.
I've been speaking with Frederick Mousseau. He's policy director with the Oakland Institute. The report is called Agroecology Case Studies. And if you go to oaklandinstitute.org, it's a link right there on their front page.